This is Mae Warren. Today is the 24th of May, 1997. I'm in Chicago, Illinois, with Willard Dumas. Is that how you pronounce it?
Dumas.
I've heard people at WNL pronounce it several different ways, and that's why I'm asking. All right. Why did you go to Washington in the first place? What attracted you?
Well, I had put all the schools that I was applying to into categories, and Washington and Lee fit neatly into the Southern Liberal Arts College. I suppose Washington and Lee doesn't like its description that way, but from what I knew about Washington and Lee, that's where it was going to fit into this sort of chart I had, and it came down to finances. My father had a classmate from dental school who was practicing, I think, in Charlotte, and so he was pushing Davidson, and he had just come to visit my my parents, and I think he may even had a daughter at Davidson, and so he was just singing the praise of Davidson. I had become acquainted with Washington and Lee, I think the summer previous. I had worked for the chief administrative officer of the city of New Orleans in an internship program, and one or two businessmen had come into the office and had asked me where was I thinking of going to college, and they had mentioned Washington and Lee, and it was the first that I had heard of Washington and Lee. And as it turned out, my father had a friend and colleague who was an orthodontist by the name of Marshall Gottsagen from New Orleans, and at the time he was my orthodontist, and he started mentioning Washington and Lee to me.
Had he gone there?
Yeah, Dr. Gottsagen must be from the class of 58 or 60.
And how do you spell his name?
Gottsagen, S-E-G-E-N.
Okay.
And he has two sons who attended Washington Lee, one of which was in my class, Tom. I can't even remember. I think it's Thomas Gottsagen. I haven't seen them in a while. But anyway, so I had a relationship with Dr. Gottsagen that was professional because he was my orthodontist and, you know, somewhat friendly. He and my father were friends, and so he started singing the praise of Washington and Lee. And so I sent away for the application. I think I had maybe even received something from them, and I thought it was a really nice looking brochure. And so, well, so when it came down to everything, there was Davidson of Washington and Lee, and I applied to maybe 12 schools. So even in the mid-1980s, this was probably a good $400 worth of applications, and there was only so much I could ask my parents to spend. So we're like, either Davidson or Washington and Lee. So I flipped a quarter, and it was heads, and so it was George Washington.
That's great.
And I applied to WNL. And I had sort of forgotten about Washington and Lee. I had had interviews for a number of institutions locally in New Orleans, UVA and Georgetown, and Notre Dame. And Notre Dame had been the family favorite. My father had wanted to attend Notre Dame, and I think probably because of segregation and their financial situation, he couldn't go to Notre Dame. And he and my mother were very pro. We were raised Roman Catholic, and they were very pro going to Notre Dame, and they had a number of family friends whose kids had been there. And I had been accepted to Notre Dame, and the brothers who had educated me in high school, a number of them, had gone to Notre Dame. So it was, I think it was between there and the University of Virginia. And I had pushed Washington and Lee off to the side. And I got a letter saying that there would be an alumni interview. And I decided not to go. And my parents said, well, at the least, you owe them the respect to go to the interview since they've set up an alumni interview for you, and we've also paid $50 for this, $50 or $40. So I went, and I interviewed with, I believe, James Brooke or James. Jim Brooks, maybe the class of 74, 75, or 76. Relatively, you know, sort of youngish guy. He was an investment banker, I think. And it was the interview with Mr. Brooks. I had had interviews for Georgetown, Notre Dame, UVA, where else, I think, Boston University. I mean, it was a wide variety of schools. But the first, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, it was sort of the typical interview. And then after that, I think Jim Brooks started to tell me the highlights of his 4 years at Washington and Lee. And he made Washington and Lee come alive, unlike anyone I had met from any of the other schools I had applied to. And so what had probably been scheduled as a 45-minute interview, I think, turned into 3 hours.
Oh.
Now, I can't remember whether or not, I know I wasn't of legal age, but I think he actually offered me a glass of bourbon after all of this. I mean, I don't think it was such a terrible transgression. And I think I just sat and I listened to him, and he told me about the honor system, and he told me, he described the beauty of the Shenandoah Valley. And his experiences there, he may have been a native of Maryland, but for some reason he was able to contrast it with my life in New Orleans and just even the physical surroundings and how it just really appealed to me. So he contacted the admissions office and we worked it out, and I think I flew up to visit WNL a few weeks after that. And the moment I set foot on the campus, I began a relationship that, you know, has evolved over, I guess it's close to 10 years now. And I had a wonderful experience, the visit.
What were your impressions that first trip?
Oh, it was the honor system that astounded me. The honor system, and also the physical beauty. I think I was there in the spring. That sounds right. I mean, I don't know how that works with the logistics of admissions, but I seem to recall that there was snow melting on the ground, but that there was also, I think, the dogwoods were blossoming. I mean,
That's not impossible in Rockbridge.
No, I mean, I've come to appreciate, having lived in New England now and in the Midwest, that's quite possible. But so I remember the dogwoods. I remember green, I remember snow, and it hadn't snowed in New Orleans at that point since I was like 3 or 4. So I was definitely overwhelmed by the surroundings. I was particularly impressed with the honor system. I remember just getting sort of the initial tour, and I remember there were a group of men playing lacrosse, which I had never seen before. And I think I remember that they had their, like, possessions, you know, wallets and jewelry off to the side and unmolested. And I was just like, wow, this is just amazing. And then I began to notice bikes, you know, unattended. And I know things that have had to change over the last, I mean, even since I've been a student there, as society intrudes more into the university life. But that really struck me. And then I remember visiting and staying with students and the dorm rooms being unlocked and seeing people take their exams. And I was just overwhelmed at the sense of trust that was established in the community. And I decided at that moment, I think that I wanted to go to school in an environment like that. I think I remember meeting Brad Root, who would be the president of the executive committee the following year when I was a freshman. I think he'd maybe just been elected president of the student body. I'm not sure. But I remember thinking, I want to be president of the student body. I want to have something to do with this honor system. It was so different from the private and Catholic education that I had, and one that I knew was not dissimilar from, you know, a lot of my contemporaries in New Orleans. Cheating was very much a part of academic life. And, you know, I've since learned that from my classmates that I met in law school and even in graduate school, that they were confronted with classmates who cheated. And at that point in my life, it was something that had really bothered me. I think I had seen a classmate of mine who was very well respected in high school actually cheat on an exam. And I didn't do anything about it, and it had really bothered me. And other people had known this, and this had been a very successful student, a very bright student. So for me, Washington and Lee at that point became very important to me. That was the type of environment I wanted to go to school in.
And were your parents surprised when you came home and announced that?
Yes, they were quite shocked. And I have to say, a little disappointed. My parents are very much children of the South. They actually had an acquaintance, a family friend who had a nephew who had gone to Washington Lee and who was black and had evidently had some problems there in the early 80s or maybe in the late 70s that were race related, and he left. He left campus, I think, after a year there. My father had gone to school at Harvard University for dental school because he could not go to school in Louisiana to attend dental school because LSU was a segregated institution. So he had to take the train up to Washington, D.C. And he rode on the train with students who were attending Washington and Lee and the University of Virginia. And so he knew what he saw, and he told me how they treated the porters on the train. And the reckless abandon at which they conducted themselves and put individuals like my father and the black porters in danger of their life at that time in the South. Just whether it was fraternization or through their annex. And so he had reservations, personal experience, but he also knew Marshall Gottsick and I think their relationship, their professional relationship was very good. I mean, Dr. Gottsick is a Jewish orthodontist who sent patients to my father. My father sent patients to him, which, you know, there are not a lot of. I mean, that wasn't something that was taking place in New Orleans in the 80s. I mean, the medical community is still very segregated. I think he knew someone like Dr. Gottsagen, who I think, you know, sort of tempered that view. But he had some reservations, and so did my mother. I think they had sort of thought that Notre Dame would have been much more of a nurturing environment, and perhaps a better place. I mean, after all, they knew that Robert E. Lee was buried on the campus. I think they probably had visions of it being sort of a shrine of the South. And so they were quite perplexed that I wanted to go to school there. And I think concerned. I think that they recognized that it may not have initially appeared to have been the best environment for me.
And what was your reaction to that? And, well, I guess let me step back. Did you have any sense on that initial visit that you would be having problems with racial issues if you went there?
I think I knew that there would be challenges there. Because clearly I had come to realize that the culture of Washington and Lee was sort of this culture of the South. It was an Anglo-Southern culture. But in some ways, and I now realize this isn't how one should pick to go to school, I thought of it as being a challenge. And I had been encouraged to pursue a career in law by my parents. And I can't say that I didn't have an interest in it, but I suspected my future held a legal career and probably a corporate legal career. And so I figured that this wouldn't be such a bad environment. Improve my country club sports. And sort of learn how the elite of the South, thinking I would come back to the South, played and worked. I did know in the back of my head that I thought that it would be challenges, and I thought that they would be good, and I thought that it would be good experiences to have. Maybe that was not calculating, but I thought it was a part of an education that would perhaps be better than going to a Notre Dame, where I naively thought that maybe race wouldn't be as much of an issue, I don't know, or going to a traditional predominantly black institution like my parents attended, where I know they had a very good education. But I thought that, you know, I probably needed to experience these challenges sooner than later. I mean, not that my high school wasn't sort of the same thing, but I knew I also needed to, you know, get out of New Orleans and the very sort of peculiar values and mentality that exist in New Orleans and in Louisiana.
Did you meet with other black students when you came for that initial visit?
Yes. I did. I remember going to the MSA, which was the Minority Student Association, and I think that they still, it was still the Chavis House then. So I remember meeting a number of black students and other minority students. But I can't say that anyone stands out from that visit, with the exception of Mimi Elrod and I think Brad Root. I mean, thinking back now on it, I think those are really the only two people that I can remember meeting. Actually, one of my dorm counselors, who's black, he was there at the time, and I remember meeting Richard. But you know, it was sort of the situation when I visited a lot of other schools. The perspective of the black students, the African American students, or that, you know, we can get a good education here, but it comes at a price, and that price is, you know, we are a minority here, and for some people we're a novelty, for other people we're invisible, for some people, you know, we're a source of friendship, you know, For other people, we're just, you know, sort of the typical American view. You know, we have your prejudice, we have our prejudices, and you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to interact with you, or you know, it's. I mean, that was the perspective that you got at a lot of institutions. And that clearly these students articulated that there were opportunities to get involved and that you could do a lot. Actually, I remember meeting Michael Webb, who I believe that year had become secretary of the executive committee. And I think he was the highest elected black member of the EC to date, I mean, at that point. I think Michael was from New Jersey. It's coming back to me. I was actually thinking about him the other day because he had run for mayor of Newark, New Jersey, not too long after he graduated from Washington and Lee, and Newark just had an election or a primary, and it was on the news on National Public Radio. And I remember that Michael didn't win, but I was trying to think, I wonder where Michael is, what is he doing, what is he up to? So I remember meeting Michael Webb, and actually he was influential in my, I think, decision, because Michael was someone who had gotten involved in an organization that I knew that I wanted to be involved with, which was the executive committee. You know, the other students of color who I met, and international students, actually were fairly involved. They were involved in different organizations. You know, the university doesn't like to admit it, nor do a lot of other institutions, but usually I think your students of color and your international students tend to be involved in more organizations and participate more than the average white male fraternity guy at Washington and Lee, who counts as his organizations his fraternity. So, you know, I saw all the opportunities and organizations that students were involved with, and I thought that it was a viable option. And I think that what made it that was the honor system, because I thought that it made Washington and Lee special. It made it more special than the University of Virginia, which I have, you know, I've had animated discussions with classmates, well, with friends who attended the University of Virginia, our honor system versus theirs, and it's really not the same. And I hope it never will be the same, but it was the honor system that got me to go to Washington and Lee.
So you arrive, you're a student, you're enrolled. What was your impression then? What happened when you got there?
My parents drove me up. It was probably the longest drive I had ever taken with them. They filled me in on the drives they used to make between New Orleans and Washington, D.C. And we got off the interstate once or twice, and they showed me where they could stop and where was a safe place where they could use a restroom. Or it made me appreciate probably a little bit more about American history and sort of what part of the country I was going into. I arrived there, and it was very difficult for them leaving. And my mother supposedly cried as far as Roanoke, and my father threatened to put her on a plane back to New Orleans, and he would just drive back on his own. I remember the excitement of just meeting people from all over the country. I mean, predominantly the South, people from all over. And I was sort of exhilarated. I enjoyed meeting people from all over. I had always found New Orleans to be painfully provincial. And it was becoming everything that I had hoped that it would be. There was, I guess what sticks out in my mind, there was Fraternity Rush, which I had elected to participate in. I had had discussions with a few of the black male students who had elected to go through Fraternity Rush. And for me, I thought that I would make it a viable option. And I knew that was something that my father and grandfather had reservations about because they were both in Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity when they went to college. Even my grandfather in the 20s. He had, you know, friends who had founded the fraternity. And so, you know, I knew that was somewhat of an issue, but, you know, I also knew that a lot of the fraternities definitely were segregated, but I figured it would be a good way for me to meet people. It would be a good way for me to meet my fellow classmates outside of my dorm and to meet a lot of the upperclassmen. And I just went through thinking that, well, you know, whatever comes of it, you know, happens. And it was, I have to say that I did avoid going to certain fraternity houses. And
so it was well known which ones were segregated?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I look back upon that decision, and the people who told me meant well, because I think that they had actually had bad experiences there in Fraternity Rush. I mean, almost like sort of the Animal House thing. So I took them up on their advice, but I went to, I mean, they had come up with houses that had never had any black pledges, had never even, they thought, would consider it, but they had friends who were white, who they thought were very open-minded, very nice guys, and thought that, you know, I think you could actually fit in at this house. But for the issue of race, I don't think these guys would have any problem with you. And so I went there, and I thought that it would be a good experience having to smile, meet people, make all sorts of. That was a part of me, I think, when I had real political ambitions, which I have no longer. And so I went through Rush, and I did meet a lot of people, and it was a good experience. I can't say it wasn't without some painful experiences. I mean, race was an issue.
Can you tell me about painful experiences? What happened?
Well, I'm trying to think of something that sticks out in my mind. I remember, I mean, being interested in one or two houses and being there on the night when bids were extended to my classmates. Now, the houses technically should have not had those of us who were not receiving bids there. And I remember being there, and that was a disappointment. Now, I could say that happened to other students who weren't black. But
you're saying you were there and the bids were not extended
right,
to you.
Right, right. And, you know, the courteous thing would be is to have only the people there who were receiving bids there. And I knew that race had been an issue. I mean, I knew the houses that extended me bids. I was probably the only Rashi who actually met not only every member of the fraternity, but alums who came back to assist. And for those who had reservations, they set up situations so that I could spend time with them. And we talked about everything.
And they were impressed that I was fifth or sixth generation of my family going to college, and I had to meet their standards, more so than any of my white classmates. And that's something that I've shared with a lot of my friends throughout my years, especially when I was at Washington and Lee, when race was an issue. I never deluded myself into believing that I went through Rush the same way that anyone else went through at Rush at Washington and Lee. And I was offered a bid, I believe, at three fraternities, and I took a bid at Sigma Chi. And I was quite pleased because there were a number of people in that fraternity who were campus leaders. And I don't think it was so much because they were campus leaders, but I liked the qualities that they had. I thought that they were scholars and student leaders, and I was very impressed with these people. I knew that while I didn't approve of it, I knew that they were taking a chance with me. And I suppose at this point in my life, I kind of resent the fact that I was proud that they were taking a chance with me. Actually, I don't think about it that much, but years later, it became much difficult with Fraternity Renaissance. I had numerous conversations with John Wilson where I would try and, articulate to him the deep problems I had, that the university was floating bonds and raising money to renovate fraternity houses that still were segregated, and using university funds or using the tax-exempt status at the university to promote and bolster these organizations that would remain that way. And I still doubt.
What kind of reaction did you get?
Probably the only case one of the few cases. I think John Wilson was very sympathetic, but his constituency, it's not individuals like myself. I mean, those aren't the people who contribute to Washington and Lee. And he said that, there's no facial discrimination in the sense that there are no laws in the bylaws anymore that say these things, and that we had to go upon their word that they were not using race to discriminate against people. Although at my fraternity, I believe I had to sign a statement and swear that I was a Christian gentleman. I think that still, in 1987 was in the pledge contract that the National Fraternity sent out. Maybe it was the old copy they had. Although I think that there were Jews in our fraternity. I always tried to articulate that to John Wilson, that I had some problems with that. And he gave a wonderful speech one day. It may have been Founders Day or Lee's birthday, reflecting upon, I think, a story that had just run in the Roanoke paper about the desegregation of cemeteries there. And he said something about, what will we say 50 years ago, 50 years from today, about the world we lived in at Washington and Lee? His speech was basically, how could we have maintained a society that believed in even separating people in death? And I think that's what provoked me to go and see him about the Fraternity Renaissance. I said, well, look, President Wilson, actually, you're funding these fraternity houses. I had lots of friends in different fraternity houses. including, you know, those that were, I mean, segregated. And it was always a difficult decision, because either it was a level of friendship that caused them to reveal sort of a crisis on their own part of judgment and say, well, you know, we had so-and-so go through Rush, and he's a great guy, but, you know, the house just isn't ready. And, I mean, people would confide these things in me over the years at Washington and Lee, individual students who realized that there were race problems. So,
did you stay in Sigma Chi?
No, I did not. I ended up de-pledging during Pledge Week. My grandmother died in the middle of Pledge Week, and I went home.
When you were a freshman?
Yes, when I was a freshman. I think 3 days into Pledge Week, and I went home to New Orleans, and I was quite close to my grandmother, and I gave up all interest in Sigma Chi after that, and I chose not to complete the rest of the program. And there had been problems. I actually had some problems with the fraternity house while I was there. Not from any of the brothers, but from two of my pledge brothers who would make racist jokes or something, and I actually ended up punching one of them, which caused a huge rift in the house, because you're not supposed to do stuff like that. I think it's the only time I've been moved to physical violence in my life. So, but that wasn't the reason, I mean, the eventual reason why I left. But after that, it became more interesting because, you know, I developed friendships my friendships with other people who were, I mean, I guess 80% of the males at Washington and Lee were in fraternities. So naturally, I had a lot of friends who were in fraternities. By then, I'd been elected to the executive committee. So, you know, I always had an invitation to spend time at this fraternity house or that one, and there was one with a lot of guys from New Orleans, and so basically after that I had a standing invitation to spend every big weekend at a number of fraternity houses if I, you know, so desired. And I wasn't the only student that had that invitation. There were other students.
So you got onto the EC as a freshman?
I ran for the EC freshman, the one freshman seat, and I was elected. It was a good experience. I mean, I met a lot of my classmates, and it was a good political experience running for office.
Tell me about that. I haven't talked to anybody as young as you who still feels the juices from politics of it all.
You just, you know, it was set up to meet with groups of people. So the best way to do that was to go to fraternity houses. So, you know, someone there would, you know, say, well, Willard's going to come and speak at dinner. And, you know, maybe actually I didn't do that freshman year. That may have been later on. That may have been sophomore year or junior year. Maybe freshman year, I went around the dorms. I can't remember now. That may have been something that came much later. But you know, there was a time in my life when I enjoyed doing stuff like that. And you know, I could talk politics and I could assemble shared interests that we had. I was also pledged class president for my fraternity. So, you know, I think that I made it difficult for those people who wanted to see me only as black, or to see me as black first, because I went out and I got involved in things where they had to say, oh, well, he's the Sigma Chi Pledge class president also. So, you know, I could relate to what all the, well, what 80% of the males were going through in the freshman class. And the whole.
So then you were an independent.
Yes, yes, I was an independent. But, you know, I also became friends with a number of individuals who, for, you know, all the reasons people de-pledge fraternities, there were a number of people who had become independents, or some people who had chosen never to join fraternities. And
was there a common thread among those people? Why would somebody in a place as the word everybody uses, the homogeneous as Washington and Lee, where 80% of the people are in fraternities, why do people choose not to be in fraternities?
Well, some of them, I think, wanted to be individuals and have their freedom. I think some, you know, just had a problem with the whole concept of pledging a fraternity. I think in some ways it was people who sort of rejected, you know, that part of Washington and Lee. I'm not sure what else to really say.
I'm intrigued by it because I'm a child of the 60s when nobody joined fraternities or sororities or anything like that. And so I identify with the independents. And yet I see how life is at Washington and Lee, and I just wonder how you survive socially at Washington and Lee as an independent.
I think part of it also became interest. I think when people saw that fraternity life was basically going to fraternity parties every weekend and spending time with this one group of people, I think that didn't appeal to them. For the best fraternities, I mean, they're still, their program is, you know, these are your brothers. These are the people you spend most of your free time with. It was very odd. You know, people were sort of held up and said, oh, well, he's really good friends with so-and-so in another fraternity house. And people were like, you know, that's sort of a model. Not one that we really want to emulate, but it's a model. Mm-hmm. And I think that there were people who didn't like that confinement. I think that became definitely a big part of it. There were some people who I think realized also not only was Washington and Lee not for them in the sense being in a rural community in the middle of nowhere in Virginia, they began to develop other interests. And, you know, we had, my roommate, sophomore year, three of us were independents. One had depledged from the fraternity, one had received bids from a number of fraternities and chose not to join any of them, and one did belong to a fraternity, but he didn't belong to the, you know, inner sanctum fraternities. He belonged to Delta Tau Delta, which I believe the university's finally gotten rid of. You know, the politics of this, I think if you probably talk to alumnus, there it's, you know, it doesn't really change. I mean, there are houses where alums contribute a lot of money, and, you know, these are influential people, and their children, grandchildren, and nephews, they belong to these houses. So, you know, we did lots of other things.
You turned the tape over.